Welcome to Imagine This Podcast, where we discuss, celebrate, and highlight all of the excellent and abundant arts and culture in Milwaukee.
We hope that after listening to the pod, you'll see and experience our city and the incredibly vibrant arts and culture community in a new way.
I'm David Lee.
And I'm Mac Antigua. David, the teen keeps going on. Governor Evers says May 26th.
We're keeping it safe. We're keeping it safe. We're keeping it at home.
Flatten that curve, baby. Keep it flat.
Yeah. Went to the grocery store this weekend, and there was like a line to get in because they didn't want too many people in the store, and they were like, you know, 6 feet apart. Felt like going to the club. Felt like I was like 21 years old trying to get in the club, but it was like the 44-year-old version of it to try to get into the supermarket.
I like to do some Evian bottle service, please. Yeah, I want to make sure I get that area. We've been in this for about a few weeks. What arts and culture has sustained you so far?
You know, I saw the script that you shared yesterday, and this question.
I like when you take people behind the scenes with this. I like how you go meta, because everybody loves it when you go meta.
This question gave me a little bit of hives, right? Because I was like,
it doesn't have to be high art. It doesn't have to be high culture.
Well, here's the thing. I've just been working. And so give me a little bit of nerves, but then I thought about it, and you know what it was, what it is,
no.
reading all of these artist relief fund, applications. I've been introduced to so many Milwaukee based, artists. Mm. And so just reading and visiting their proofs of practice, has just been really, really, encouraging and fulfilling, and it's really kept me going. And I think one thing that's been really kept me going is discovering all of these new bands that I never would have heard of. Like I've bought so many albums on Bandcamp in the last 3 weeks of Milwaukee-based artists. That's just been really cool. And I note that like if I was 21 years old and I knew these bands, it'd make me the coolest 21-year-old in Milwaukee, right? But it's just super fun. How about
I
you?
I bought a couple of copies of Rex's album because they did the opener, like our fundraiser from March 13th, right? And I just bought one. I sent it to a couple of folks around the country. And they were like, this is really good stuff. And I'm like, of course it's good stuff. I sent it to you. This is good. This is rock and roll, baby. This is guitars. This is the stuff. So
pure pleasure, right? It's pure pleasure.
It's good stuff, Rex, man. So that's been good. I've been using a lot of Rex when I'm grinding these spreadsheets about the Artist Relief Fund, like trying to put together reviews and all this stuff. I play a lot of Rex, which I grind it through. The album's been awesome. Other random arts and culture for me has been going on YouTube and finding all these Filipino DJ mega mixes of 90s music. I mean, like Erasure and New Order, but also like these like small obscure one hit people like Warren Rigg or John Cicada. Like if you're of a certain age, these names will probably resonate with you. But like these folks make these amazing mixes, and so I've just been listening to that when I've been grinding here at work or even just working out. Because I think part of it's the familiarity. Like I just love. As much as it was great to listen to Rex, it's new. There's something about, I think, comfort food. Like I got to hear this music from a happier time when I was in my 20s and like just having it remixed and hyped. There's some warm feelings there. So that's definitely sustained me. And also no sports, right, David? So I'm watching Britain's Best Home Cooks because that's the closest thing to sports that I have. And Mary Berry is a balm for the soul. She's a judge. She's a balm for the soul. So I've enjoyed Hulu's Britain's Best Cooks. To sustain my lack of sports.
But despite no sports, they have moved up The Last Dance to April.
That's right. That's right.
Tonight.
That's right. So obligatory Chicago reference on a Milwaukee arts podcast. Yes, the Bulls, one of the greatest teams of all time, that last squad, Last Dance.
Keep that up for you.
I'm glad we're promoting ESPN. It's not like ESPN needs any help promoting their stuff.
But hopefully they will hear this and then throw some money our way.
Let's use the 270th ranked podcast in arts to pump out the worldwide leaders in sports only original programming, The Last Dance. All right, let's get to it. We're continuing to respond. We're responding to COVID-19 personally by taking in this media. But Imagine MK is also responding to COVID-19. And David, I want to give you an update on the relief fund. Yeah. We mentioned it with Rex. It started with a concert. that was live streamed on March 13th, and since then has grown. And at this point, as a recording, we've been able to provide relief for 300 artists, which is to the tune of approximately $137,000 of relief that's been going out to 300 artists. So it's amazing support from our city's philanthropic community. We've gotten over 200 donations through the website. So thanks to Milwaukee residents that have been standing up, and also just the great generosity in such a quick amount of time. So we're excited, happy to say that through today's date, we've been able to get that far.
And how many folks, so while we've gotten that far, which is an incredible story, how many folks do we have to get to fully declare success on this project?
Yeah, if we want to be perfect for this, for the amount of folks that were got their requests approved, we got 124 approvals to go, and it's about 55,775 to go. So that's through April 30th. That's our target. And again, we create an April 30th target because we want to create urgency, and because it's relief. We're just trying to get relief out there. People paying rent, people just sustaining themselves. It's not. These are micro, small grants, right? So the key is to get it out as quick as possible, and hopefully we're creating urgency, not just in the Milwaukee network, but hopefully throughout Milwaukee who's listening to this. Please help us. If you can, go to imaginemk.org and click on the Artist Relief Fund, and you know anything will help because we want to meet these requests by April 30th.
You know, I think one thing that has been really inspiring that has really seemed to have come online in the last week or so has been the efforts that other artists have undertaken to support the relief fund. I know that we got a couple of really nice donations from artists donating a portion of their online sales to the fund. Yes. We have a number of different artists committing to donating portions of auctions and sales to the fund. Can you talk a little bit about some of the folks who have some of the more interesting things that have come across our transom?
Yeah, I mean, what's really exciting is that sometimes folks tell us, like, here, we're going to do this thing, which is super amazing, like N43 Records, which is the Milwaukee record company that has folks like Lex Allen and a few other artists. They did a streaming fundraiser last Thursday night where 50% of their live stream concert, anything that came through there, was going to go to us. So great to see that. And it's the live stream concert's still up at their website if you want to check it out. Really amazing. Home performances by those artists. A gentleman by the name of Mike Bate, who's Lit MKE, who does some really amazing art, repurposing, repurposing wine bottles and beer bottles and some just really fascinating upcycling and repurposing. He had a 414 day sale and was able to, he committed a portion of his sales that day and gave a really sizable donation, impressive donation that day. And thanks to also company, there's a thing called Milwaukee Coming Together, or Come Together Milwaukee, which is an online web makers, Milwaukee makers who are committing to devoting their proceeds, 20% of their proceeds to causes in Milwaukee. And so a group called We Are Vincentia, who does women's stories in shirts and in patches and in other pieces, they've committed their sales this weekend's market day, 20% of their sales to us. So, and then finally, Mad Rogues and No Studios is doing a live stream next Thursday, happy hour on Thursday 23rd, Bourbon and the Bard. So performances about William Shakespeare on his birthday. And so all that they're going to raise through that is going to go through the fund. So it's so awesome to see Milwaukee artists stepping up to support their peer artists in this way. And in fact, several artists, David, were actually grantees, early grantees, and they're not turning it around and they're paying it forward, right? So that's super amazing too as well.
Yeah, it's been really inspiring to see the community coming together surrounding this issue. And similarly, last week was 414 day and we released our arts and culture sector video.
Life in Motion
with the beautiful words of Dasha Kelly Hamilton. I think it's the Facebook post has reached 30,000 people or so, seen by thousands and thousands and thousands of folks. Positively Milwaukee showed it this morning on their Sunday show. Which is, I think, super exciting.
Increased, I mean, for those that are into stats, we increased our followership on two platforms by about 15% that day, just from that video. Yeah. So, I mean, it goes to show you, when you have really cool, you know, if you have a really cool story to tell, people want to know that story. And it was just so awesome to have that video to tell the story of about 10 artists in town, and collectives in town that make Milwaukee vibrant and amazing through their art.
It was also funny. We had talked about, we recorded the pod with Pat Buckley last week. We were talking about the City Strong videos, right? And then of course on 414 day, like a bevy of Milwaukee City Strong videos dropped, right? And it was like, if only we could have coordinated.
There's an analogy there. I'm sure there's a story about Milwaukee in that. I mean, you know, we try to do some research, like who's dropping their video, who's dropping the video with the piano, tinkling piano, right, and like, you know, the minor chord strings with longing looks at Miller Park that's empty and knowing someday. Yeah. So, and in fact, Pat Buckley shared with us a video of all of the companies that are doing COVID-19 commercials, and they have a playbook of drone shots over empty highways. And a saying that you matter, you matter. So that being said, I love that it's out there, and it's going to continue long after 414 day, right? That's our love letter to the arts and cultural community, and letting Milwaukee know that Imagine MK is here to amplify, connect, and lift up that voice that's going to shape the city.
Yeah, and once we figure out what the end game is on this quarantine, and we get back to business, we will be releasing a version 2 of the video, which will be a lot more celebratory and a lot more sort of unbridled joyful.
The remix.
The remix, that's right.
The more swagger, the
classic
more strut,
version. The classic version, that's right.
The classic. Speaking of voice, David, what else is happening?
Yeah, so last week we also had a COVID-19 task force meeting focused on ensuring that arts and culture are included in the relief and recovery, any new relief and recovery legislation that might be coming down the pike at the state or implementation at the local level. We had over 40 arts organizations and arts leaders on that call, which is really, really incredible. Folks from Next Act, the Ballet, the Rep, the Marcus Center, the Symphony, God, the list goes on and on. And the goal of that call was really to align on a op-ed signed by our organization's CEOs and a sign-on letter sent to elected officials signed by our organization's board chairs. So we have sort of this this kind of like bifurcated grass tops advocacy strategy to ensure that, or to tell the story, right, to raise awareness of the fact that our city's arts and culture sector, our county's arts and culture sector generates $250 million worth of, that's billion with a B.
It's a B. I was going to say that's a B, y'all.
$250 million of expenditures every year. And together as a sector, that's real money. And that's, that requires, I think, our elected officials to pay attention to and take care of our sector in a way that they would take care of another industry or sector. So, so that's very exciting. We're going to be rolling out the sign-on letter more broadly in the upcoming week. So stay tuned for that.
So that's the COVID-19 update. We continue to work on that, even though we're working remotely and distantly. But the push to make sure Milwaukee arts and culture doesn't sleep. And what also doesn't sleep out there, speaking of segues, is that we do still have artists out there that are continuing to hone their craft and in their own unique ways, adding to the mosaic of Milwaukee vibrancy. And so we're excited to have, after the break, you'll hear our interview with Mariah Crocker, a collaborative performance maker, a walker, improviser, and teacher. Mariah's got a background in athletics, as she's competed at the Olympic level in rhythmic gymnastics, and she's also toured with the Palabulous Dance Company out of New York City, which is toured worldwide. And she was also raised in a family that was very clear about their commitment to kinesthetic being. Or in other words, they walked and bike everywhere. She currently creates highly physical works, attentive to precision, restraint, and abandon. And if you're interested in letters after her name, she holds an MFA in dance from the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. Or as my fellow Illinoisans like to call it, Shambana. We're going to talk with her after the break.
I want to stay soft. Want to feel it all. Let the rush of earth and dust wash over me. I want
to
stay.
Welcome, Mariah, to the pod. How are you today?
I'm all right. It's sunny out. Thanks. How are you?
Dude, you know, we're stuck inside, but doing okay.
Yeah. Thanks for enduring being inside with us metaphorically across Zoom and taking time to visit with us today.
Yeah. My pleasure.
Yeah.
So when we learned of you, we were just super interested in the work that you do in not only some of the movement for quarantine stuff, which we'll talk about in a little bit, but just your conceptualization of movement was really, really striking, at least to me, when I was reading through your website. Can you just, I guess, tell us a little bit about your origin story and how you got interested in dance specifically, but sort of more generally in the sort of, I think, the aesthetics of movement?
Yeah, sure. I was raised in a house that believed in walking and biking everywhere. I was raised to be passionate about something and then to work as hard as I could at that thing. And that was really sort of the mantra of our house, our house growing up.
Wow.
And all of us, I guess, are gifted as teachers, and we have this sort of kinesthetic receptiveness to physicality. That's what our family kind of does. And so
was that on like a family crest? Was that like a family crest or something? How does one learn that? I mean, like, that is super intense.
You know, we've thought of for years about like, how do we describe this thing we have? You know, we're not super athletes, but we are receptive to a certain physical work.
Very cool.
So we totally delved into that. You know, my siblings are all have made their livings as professional athletes. And I grew up as a rhythmic gymnast. I represented the country internationally for years. And so when I left that situation, you know, my contract literally ended with USA Gymnastics, and I was suddenly done being an athlete. And I was pretty broken physically, mentally, spiritually. And I vowed I wouldn't move again. I was done. So I went to school to be an elementary school teacher at UW-Madison. And wandered into a modern dance class, and this wonderful woman, Barbara Grubel, who danced for an amazing company, Ralph Lemon, for years in New York, but was and is now a professor at UW-Whitewater. She pulled me into her class and was like, "You need to stay here with me." And I did. I you know, my relationship to my body was about, up to that point, was about a fulfillment of requirements, right? About, you know, I was raised in a sport of being evaluated on a scale of 1 to 10 by, you know, a group of middle-aged white women in severely starched suits, you know, while I was dressed in spandex, you know. So I began this journey of healing where I was asked to question my relationship to weight. Before, my relationship to weight was smaller is better, disappear more to be more visible. And suddenly I was asked to understand the power of having weight in my body. I was asked to talk about and verbalize and experience movement rather than get it right. I was asked to have a relationship with gravity, which, you know, so much of sport is about resistance too, you know, fighting against, you know, what gravity does to the body in order to obtain, you know, these impossible feats. And so I knew I needed to stay in that place. I needed to learn some things. And I'm still on that journey, you know. I'm still trying to light up the dim spaces of my body. That's really what I teach, and that's really what I try to keep on investigating in my own self. So that's led to, you know, buying a one-way ticket to New York after undergrad. Within 6 months, I was scooped up by a major dance company, and I was touring Europe. That's led me through Asia. I just got back from teaching in France. I do a little bit of teaching in higher ed. I do a lot of children's dance work. And I teach for, you know, Milwaukee Public Schools, for dance works here. Yeah, I'm back in Milwaukee coming to terms with my Midwesternness, and it's something to come to terms with, you know, and I'm here to serve. Now I'm finally ready to be a part of this community that I've been away from for a very long time.
You know, as I heard your story, Mariah, it reminded me of this. We talked about this on our last pod, this notion of the familiar becoming strange and the strange becoming familiar. And that sounds like the journey you had with your relationship with physicality and being an elite athlete and then wanting to walk away from all that. And then it's so much part of you that someone else saw. It's like, you need to be here because they even saw it in you, right? Like, as much as you tried to run away with it. The other analogy that in my head was Jason Bourne from The Bourne Identity. Like, you were like an Operation Treadstone, and you're just like, I just want out, man. And then, like, you still got it. Like, you can't
they bring her back in.
You still can't but you're doing it on your terms. Now you're on your terms of what does it mean to have the facility and knowledge and power. And it sounds like continued discovery, because it's not over, right? You don't have the final answers in that, and you're still trying to discover. And I think it's fascinating and striking that now it's sort of like you're intervening with young people. Like, you knew how you were taught physically, and now you want to make sure, okay, well, if I'm dealing with young people now, I want to make sure they're introduced to themselves in a way that I wasn't introduced to when I was becoming an elite, you know, in USA Gymnastics. Anyways, that was my reaction. Your story.
I mean, that's right on. And, you know, I think one thing children remind me so specifically of the power of a beginner's mindset, right? Of continuing to go back to the place of, how do I stand in the unknown? You know, what is that? How does that humble me and open me up to curiosity? And yeah, that's definitely a place where I begin teaching and making my work.
I was struck by your comment about how movement had been about fulfilling a requirement, and it sounds like, or at least the way I am hearing you talk now, it feels like movement's sort of more about joy, which for me, sort of watching people dance, that's all I can think about, right? Because I can't dance, and so when I see people dance in a certain way, it's sort of this incredible exploration of joy, pain, whatever, some emotion that sort of like has to be expressed through the body in this incredibly moving movement. But it's so interesting that movement, just sort of this idea that you also, that in your gymnastic career it was about fulfilling these requirements and doing everything perfectly, and sort of all of the emotions sort of stripped out of it, right?
Yeah. I mean, at one point there was joy involved in I think the pursuit of gymnastics or sport. And I know that can happen with anything that we love, right? And it happens with dance. That's my job now. Whoa, you know, what happens when I get near to losing the joy and just having to show up? How can I reset and remind myself of, like, oh, this is, you know, I had a professor, Ed Burgess, who was at UWM for years, and he would always tell the students, this is the best job in the world. And we're like, yeah, whatever. And it's true. And I hear his voice so often now, like, this is a gift to be able to inhabit my body to its fullest again and again and again. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
I just have to say, for me, when you were talking, I'm reminded of in my own physical journey, when I drop something, you know, for example,
I have this mini conversation with myself, like, oh no, I have to bend down and pick it up. And, and that's just from years of like not being agile, right? Like, sure. And kind of being husky, you know, it's I've got these ways of doing it, which now that, you know, me and David have often talked offline, we're doing a lot of this range of motion work, you know, to supplement our fitness stuff. And so I've been doing this for last month and kind of like what you described, I am like rediscovering. And this is probably not, this is like when people talk about CrossFit or something, they're like, so stop talking about it, Mac. But on this pod, I don't talk about it, but you're here, I'm going to talk about it. There is so many moments where I'm in a pose to your point going like, oh, okay. And my reaction could be, I suck at this. I'm so bad. Or my reaction could be of discovery of like, wow, well, how, what is this moment like? And huh? Right. And it sounds like you're inviting people to lean to the ladder as opposed to like, why am I so bad? I can't touch my toes or something like that. So I just, that resonated for me as well.
Yeah. I mean, I think the language around movement is so important, you know, and I've worked as a personal trainer in all sorts of settings for a decade. I've watched my language shift from a dichotomy of this and that to what if, you know, to a language of questioning or a language of, let's consider what just happened, and inviting my clients into that, to that moment of like, whoa, that was weird, you know, maybe not bad, but it was weird, you know, because if you frame it in a different language, then you do have the capacity to move forward or move sideways from that moment rather than back away from. I'm very specific about the language I use now in directing students and clients.
But I imagine, Mariah, that there's a, you may not experience this, but I'll name that parallels to me when I would teach improv. I don't do as much anymore. And there'd be moments, there's a sense of like, well, I'm the expert. They brought me in to do this. So sure. There's this desire to be like, to what you said. And when I'm really good, I'm like, wow, what just happened? And trying to fight that urge of going, this is right, this is wrong. Because that is a vulnerability too, to know, to both own in the moment, wow, I don't know what just happened. And for you, it sounds like the modeling is, let's figure that out. Even though everyone's looking at you like, well, how come you don't have it figured out? You paid for you to have it figured out. You're saying, well, yeah, that's going to happen. Like, I don't know what just happened. And when I say when I'm at my best in those moments, I'll say, as opposed to you did it wrong, I'll go, wow, my imagination hasn't touched that point. And you might be teaching me something in this moment. So that's what's just happening for me right now. So I just want to say it's rubbing up that way. And I'm just going to own, maybe you're ahead of me. I don't know. It was very clumsy, but I just have to remark, I that really resonated with me when you talked about how do you both have command when you're teaching, but also the vulnerability to be in the moment with that person.
Yeah.
Anyway, and that's a graceful, again, dance. Sorry about that awful, heavy, clumsy
that's
play
fine.
On. But it was a dance. It's a dance. It sounds like you're very graceful.
Mm-hmm. Do you find in your personal or everyday life that you're able to bring that same kind of grace into interactions?
Well, depends on your definition of grace, I guess. You know what? That is a really difficult question to consider.
I mean, I'll share that, like, so Matt can disagree or not with this, but I think my leadership style is like sort of in the same way that you've sort of described it, right? I might not know all the answers. Let's discover it together and we'll figure it out. We'll sort of understand more as we gather more information. We'll make better decisions as we get more information. But when I think of, so that to me sounds a lot like how I would want to show up on a mat as I'm stretching, right? Or as I'm trying to do my physical work to sort of create more movement in my own body. And I just can't, you know, I go to yoga classes and I'm just like, this is terrible. I don't want to be here. You know, there's no movement in my hips. My hamstrings are really tight. Like, you know, so like, I can't like, and that sort of dissonance for me is like, is really, really strange. And I don't know how to like bring that me into this other practice, which is, you know, as important. It's sort of something that, that I find that, that that is important to me. And I understand that if I can somehow mash those two together, right, or sort of like have that same sort of openness in both spaces, that progress might be made a little bit, or I would have better adjustment towards that, you know, not as limited.
Sure. You know, and I would say, I bet there is a space outside of your work where you do sort of embody that, that leadership you're talking about. You know, I consider, you know, the dance space, the classroom, as a space to practice life. And that's particularly true or easy to work within a dance space where you're working with distance from each other. You're working with touch. You're working with intimacy of sharing body weight. True colors come out quite quickly, as you know, leading theater spaces and et cetera, of vulnerability in self and our strengths and weaknesses. And so when I consider that the dance space is a practice space for life, and when I consider that my practice, my artistic practice, I would love for it to be no different from the way I step out of a dance space and walk down the street and interact with you know, folks at one point in the grocery store. So it is a practice to blur those lines, but I think that's what we're all striving for, is to take whatever personal practice we have and bring it into our community and leadership obligation or work that we do.
So you mentioned the time in which we used to go to the grocery store. How has the quarantine affected you and your practice? I mean, it seems like, you know, you can't teach and all of the other, and if your practice really is about negotiating space and touch and you can't do that now, how's that been for you?
Yeah, I had a few weeks where I shut down, you know, and I think it's really important to talk about that stasis that might be happening, might have happened for us all. And for me, it was grief, you know. I'm grieving the loss of all my work. You know, I was seeing 70 to 100 kids a week. Oh, wow. Working with 6 months to 76 years old, you know, and that is a lot of grief for me to lose that amount of interaction and service. And so I was paralyzed by that for quite a while. And so it's been a slow startup of movement practice again. And I think social media is good about talking about, you know, that a little bit of like, it's okay if you're not productive, but I want to say that as just like an average human in Milwaukee, that that's very much a part of what we're experiencing in all different ways. As far as what I'm doing now, a big part of my movement practice is walking. I've walked cities all over the world. I think 29 countries. I just finished a master's program, 3 years in the cornfields of Illinois, where I walked 1,200 miles. And that is the place for me where I find choreographic strategies. So I'm returning to walking. I walk about an hour and a half north out of the city to a wooded area. And then I allow my senses to acclimate to wherever I am. I do sonic scores of what is the closest sound I can hear? What is the farthest away sound? How can I separate out what sounds I'm hearing? What am I smelling? How does the bark feel on my hand right now? And that really grounds me in what is happening in this particular moment. And then I begin to move, and I'm hesitant to call this dancing because it's not going to resemble any dance step that would be familiar. It's more of quaking or rumbling or jiggling my body, clenching, singing, tracing the horizon, following a path of a bird. And I'm doing that because that's an assurance to me that I am alive and that the things around me are alive and that together we are going to move forward into the next moment and the next moment. That's a big part of my practice in general is working outside. I work outside the dance studio a lot, but that is the shape of my practice right now. Then I walk home, then I do some yoga, then I watch some crime, you know, dramas.
Put that streaming count to good use, maximizing that streaming subscription.
Of course, yeah.
That's good. I actually had this moment where like, this is like a mythical person. It's like, and then I watched 48 hours. Yeah. It's fine. It's like, okay.
Thank you for bringing it back. Bringing it back down.
Yeah. Cause I was like, for a while, I'm like, oh man.
It's no, sad. No.
Yeah.
Right. There's many hours to the day.
let's tell us a little bit more about Movement for Quarantine.
Sure.
Sort of now, right? You talked about your own practice, but it sounds like this is a way to bring awareness to this to others, right? Or inviting others to also engage. I'd love to hear more about that.
Yeah, I haven't been personal training, or I like to sort of call it movement facilitating, in a while. I've really just been focusing on dance, but now seems to be a moment to offer all of my skill set to clients of my past, folks who are approaching me now. As a sort of, what do you need and how can I help you with that? Movement in quarantine, you know, we hear about quarantine 15 and all those things, and that's great and wonderful that we have goals that we want to use fitness for, but movement for this particular moment is about wellness. It's a tactic to get, not just get through this period, but to be thriving as much as we can so we can do what we need to do, whatever happens next. So movement is for wellness, you know, and I've never been a trainer that focuses on the correct technique of a bicep curl, you know. I'm much more interested in what is the possibility of my client's body now and now and now. And so that has always been the focus of my training, and that is the focus of what I'm offering folks now. So I have clients that I walk with. We, you know, find our 6 foot apart distance and we walk the neighborhoods together as a way to find fellowship and movement. I have folks I make videos for and send them once a week. Hey, I only have 30 minutes in the morning. I have this much space, you know, what can you do? And that's exciting for me, of figuring out how to respond to the physical needs of others, you know. And ideally what I want to give someone is a deeper sense of breath, right? To get this all out of that. I can hear you inhaling, exhaling right now. That's great.
You triggered that. I was like, let me breathe.
Yeah.
Let me breathe.
But the more often in this period of time we can get out of that shallow half-lung breath, that triggers a huge response in our bodies, right? Of getting out of fight or flight, getting out of anxiety mode, and remembering that there were other ways that we used our bodies in the moments leading up to this. There's a wonderful teacher, Bonnie Bainbridge Cohen, and she has this image of lungs as wings. And I teach with that a lot. Of what if the lungs or the ribcage were like wings expanding and contracting? And so that's my number one goal with a client, is how can we breathe together, breathe deeper?
So how do you, you had offered that you could zoom into one of our staff meetings. Do you actually offer that to other companies or groups of people that you'd like zoom in and do like a 15-minute like stretch session with folks?
You know what? I never have. I've worked in corporate fitness before where I enter in the workplace and like 6 a.m. Everyone shows up and does this thing in the conference room together and then, you know, gets dressed for work. And I love working corporate fitness. And it just seemed like the thing to offer, in the moment. So
we might actually take you up on it, but you should do it though, because it seems like everybody's on the how do you zoom into a meeting.
Right. Well, let's test it out here first, and
yeah. Everything you said for me really resonates with regards to even meeting facilitation. In the world that I've been dabbling, I've been in my colleagues around the country. They're talking about somatics, right? And how that shows up. Yeah. And it really, everything you said just reminds me of like, oh yeah, this is for me, it's like emerging territory. It's just so in our heads, right? So in our heads all the time.
Yeah.
But we show up in three dimensions, and
it's, absolutely.
And everything we are experiencing shows up in our bodies somehow, even if we're suppressing it, right? Even if we're, because of Western traditions, show up in a certain way, and I think it's still happening in our bodies, and things are happening. And so I'm really excited about your work and looking forward to seeing it unfold more. And I think, like I said, as David said, now in this era of like, we're talking this way, maybe it's another way to revisit and going, how do we make sure we're now even more in our heads than ever. Or headsets more than ever. And so this is just it's almost a wonderful opportunity.
Let the rush of earth and dust wash over me.
Mariah, we're not gonna let you off the hook, because obviously when I say let you off the hook, we know you're called to a greater calling. And so David and I have the ability to make our guest the czar of arts and culture in Milwaukee. So right.
Problem though, as you know, is that the power only lasts for 2 minutes. So
it only lasts for 2 minutes.
Sure.
So but it does last for 2 minutes. So
right.
What policies would you pass in your reign as the arts and culture policies are starting right now?
Yeah. I would take some words out of our language as human citizens and movers. For 2 minutes, I think the words good and bad, beautiful, ugly, rigorous, and virtuosic would be gone, or we would lose the meaning of them. And what I think would be the outcome is that we as artists could enter into each other's work with curiosity instead of judgment, which we all have and harbor, and is often something I'm curious about in communities, especially Milwaukee. And like I said before, the arts are a practice space for being human, and I often offer this up to my classes as let's make the next 20 minutes these words free. And it's so impactful. And it's impactful to leave the studio or those 2 minutes with that sort of resonating of how potentially approaching human interaction through the day in a slightly altered manner. No dichotomies.
you're not about the velvet rope and letting people through. You're not about that setup. No. You're not about it. Well, it was a glorious reign, Mariah. But here's the thing. The legacy will live on. And I know David and I will commit to making sure Imagine MKE carries, maybe not specifically removing language out, but rather the intentionality of the spirit of it, which is how do we invite more to be in a place of curiosity and play?
There we go.
Because we all have that. We are all operating from a place of assets and giftedness. We have that, as opposed to starting from a place of deficiency and what we lack or what we don't hold up to a certain standard.
Sure.
I think I can commit us to that. I'm not good on getting rid of words out of language. That's not my game, but I'm born for that. I will, but I'm not the CEO.
I've always shared with our staff that, because we get to see a lot of really interesting work come through our office and meet a lot of really interesting artists doing a lot of really interesting things across the disciplines and across the gamuts, right? And very early on, I shared with our team, I was like, we love everything. Sometimes it's not for us. right? And when it's not for us, we ought to be expressing some curiosity and learn more about it. So I think that spirit is sort of the same, right?
That's a lovely way to say it.
Sometimes it's just not for us.
But I think we know when it's great for the city, right? And when it's great for the city, it's doing something that includes someone that might not be feeling included before, or makes someone feel more welcome. And everything you're doing is on track with that. You know, it's totally about
it's incredible.
That.
Yeah.
So, thanks.
You know, we only have this time together, Mariah, but how can people find you when they're not listening to our podcast?
Sure. I have a website. It's called mapsformaking.com. Mm-hmm. I also am on Instagram, where I post a lot of my other artwork and shows, etc., when shows become a thing again. And that is my first name, Mariah, MAURIAH.K.
Nice. Glad you got that URL turf before everybody else on Insta did. It's a good thing you
absolutely
claimed that right away. Thanks so much for being with us today.
You bet. My pleasure.
Light a fire beneath us and let me lead the way.
Well, I don't know about you, Mac, but that was probably one of the more interesting interviews we've had on the pod. She's definitely.
If you could use a word other than interesting, David, what word would you use?
I half expected you to say that. I think it she forced me to think about how I show up and move through the world in ways that I think I might be a little bit unhappy with, right? Like I don't like that I walk the dog with headphones in, right? Like I don't know that I wish I had the sort of like spirit of calm and grace that would allow me to kind of spend 30 minutes on a walk with Molly and just sort of take in the sense of the neighborhood, the feeling of the ground, the houses in our neighborhood. And that, you know, it's funny. It happened at first, right? When we first got Molly and I first started taking her out for long walks, like I saw so much in our neighborhood that I hadn't seen before.
Right.
And then, you know, I put on the headphones, started listening to podcasts.
Get this sucker over with.
Just get it over with. Yeah.
Let's go.
It's the sort of presence, right? I think that was what really struck me is her presence in space as she moves.
Her presence in space, even though we were on a Zoom call, like she still occupied space for me.
Yeah.
And did it in such a lovely and graceful way. And I'll say this from what I got from her. There were times where I thought, are you for real? Are you seriously for real? Because you're just amazing at how wise the wisdom that you have and the grace that you have. And at the same time, I found her to be incredibly accessible, right? It wasn't like this person I would put up on a pedestal, if anything. She's inviting me to go like, I'm going to go for a walk after this pod right now. Why not? Right? And I think that's what really awesome teachers are, right? They just go, let's go already. I used to do life coaching. And when I knew it was a really cool Cal, when I was coaching someone, they couldn't wait to hang up to do what they said they were going to do. Right? Like that's when intention becomes action, as opposed to I'm going to do this someday. When my client would go like, I can't wait to do this thing we just talked about. That's when I felt like, oh my gosh, this is so great. I feel like she's like that all the time with the people she's with. They just can't wait to be with their bodies. And that's what a gift to Milwaukee this person is. How lucky we are to have her.
That's right.
How lucky we are for you to listening to another edition of the MKE Pod. Be sure to rate 5 stars and share a positive review because it really helps people find us and move us up the charts from 270 in the United States Arts Podcast. So possibly we'd love to break the top 250 at some point.
You can email us at pod@imaginemke.org. Hit us up on Twitter and Instagram @imagine_MKE or on Facebook @imaginemke. Mention the pod on social media and we will make you a #imaginary friend. And if you donate to our artist relief fund, you become a real friend.
Until then, I'm going to go take a walk. Talk to you next week.
Take care. Bye.
Bye.